This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Philippe Couteau, CEO of Qualys.
Good morning. I'm a serial entrepreneur. That's the fifth company that I've done. We started quite some time ago with that vision that we could use internet technology. That was the same time that Salesforce.com started, and applied in a very similar way these very nascent internet technologies to security. And we started first by allowing companies to look at their internet-facing devices, just like the hackers were doing, and identify the vulnerabilities before the hackers could. And so that was a kind of a very nice service, and from there we expanded significantly our platform.
Companies are struggling with security at this point in time. If I look out there, I see 700-plus companies in the security landscape. How do companies begin to make a sensible decision on who they should choose and what makes sense for them?
So this is a very good and very deep question. Do we have hours? But one of the things that I can do is to essentially, in fact, this is going to be the theme of my talk tomorrow. And there's good news at the horizon, because I've always believed that the cloud technologies will, in fact, allow us, instead of bolting on technology as we've been doing, start to build security in. And in fact, this is exactly what we've done with Microsoft. We announced about a week ago now that Microsoft is really bundling our agent technology in Azure. So if you're an Azure customer, if you just click on the link on the Azure Security Center and we give you the view of all of your assets or resources, you click on a second link and we tell you if those assets are secure and compliant. That's still with a Qualys agent. And then you click on a third link and now you create your playbook and now you can remediate. And this is nothing to do with Qualys. This is what Microsoft offers as well natively on Azure. So security in those environments has become click, click, click. Nothing to install, nothing to update. The only thing now, what you need to do is to provide your policies, the kind of things that you don't want to see or that you need to have. So if you look back, if I may, the reason why today we have this plethora of solutions, if you look at the evolution of computing, we started with a mainframe, which lasted about 40, 45 years. And essentially, security was, in fact, built by IBM, essentially, or by these mainframe vendors. And the reason also they could do that, because that architecture, which was distributing the computing power to the large enterprise, to the very large enterprise, was essentially very contained. Data centers, which were in essentially like in Fort Knox, you could not even penetrate them physically very easily. And then the private communication lines. And then on the other end, you had, of course, the dumb terminals. Much easier to secure and to secure from within. Then the mini computer came in, which was nothing more than the repackaging or shrinking down the footprint, and now bringing that computing power to the labs and to the departments. Same principle of security. And then came the client server. And that's the point that I wanted to make. And the client server was now allowing to distribute that same computing power to the employees. Now, suddenly, the architecture was more complex. You had the servers, you had the network, which was the NAND, then became the one, and then you had the PCs. Three different pieces now that you needed to secure. And because that computing power, let's say, was inside of the company, nobody paid attention to security, really. Suddenly, viruses arrive through the floppy disk, and then now you need an antivirus. Then you need to open your communication to the outside. Now suddenly, okay, you needed to put firewalls, and the bad guys, of course, enjoyed all the more communication, the more connections, the more doors to enter, if you prefer, or windows to enter. And this is where we are today, with that plethora of solutions. And in fact, in 2012 at RSA, I gave a speech, securing the current networking environment or the enterprise network was becoming almost impossible. And conversely, I thought that now we should think about how could we secure the new cloud environment. And now what is that cloud environment? A lot of people confused, and security were very adverse to the cloud in the beginning. I think today things are changing, because that cloud environment is what? Is again three components. One, you have the large data centers, which have infinite computing power, almost infinite storage capabilities. And then they're very fractal. That's how you get the computing power, and that's how you get the storage capabilities. That's much easier to secure in many ways, because now you have this virtual image. So even the patching becomes so much easier, because now you just recreate a new virtual image and then you distribute that virtual image. And then, of course, you have to secure the entry point into these data centers. And then you have the internet as the means of communication, which Google first paid attention a lot of security push. Most everybody now adopting the SSL protocol, and now they also have embarked into the new element, which I support absolutely. Some people criticize them because they think they will take advantage of it, but the reality is that they say it's absolutely abnormal that today we can spoof a website or spoof an email. And the reason is simply because the internet protocols at the time were not thought with security in mind, because it was essentially exchanging data between universities. That's fundamentally what the internet was. So that internet is bringing now the computing power to everybody on the planet. And on the other hand, you have now absolutely a significant number of different objects that connect. So you need to secure the objects as well. So now security, you have to think of at that scale, can only be built in. You just cannot. So when you build security in, it's much easier. And the example that I will give you, and to finish on that long explanation, but I think it's your question was begging it. You look at the way we secure our homes today. It's in a very similar way. You put sensors, which you collect all the information required, but not only for the burglars, but also the temperature, many, much more information. All that is beamed up through the internet to an incident response system, which alerts the cops and alerts, of course, the fire marshal if needed, and 24/7. And then you manage everything from your phone. And also it goes to the point that if you leave your dog today, that dog, of course, is going to bark, is going to move. And then you could have a false alert. But now today, because there is cameras, you take the fingerprint of your dog, you take the voice of your dog. And if you leave your dog, not another dog, then, of course, that false alert will be eliminated. So that's a perfect example of building security in with IT in one system, which everything is interoperable and security built in. That's where security is going, which means it's a huge change in front of us for the better, and that means a lot of things have to change. And all these vendors which have been setting bolt on security would have to retool, re-architect, if they want to really continue participating in that evolution of security.
But part of that building in takes us back to a problem we've had since I've been in the industry, which was the early 1980s, and that is knowing what the assets are. When we had simply a mainframe and dumb terminals, we knew what the assets were, they were limited. Today, it's not just about those compute assets, the things that we own as an enterprise. It's not just about the bring-your-own devices that our employees bring into the office. But it's about those devices that IT doesn't understand. IoT that's been put in by a whole separate engineering team that are not connected to IT. The fridges, the televisions, the other devices bought by facilities management teams that have been brought in because they sit in our boardrooms, they sit in our comfort rooms. How do we build that accurate asset landscape if we're going to secure this from within?
So you're absolutely right in what you say. And by the way, the security is not incompatible with knowing your assets. But essentially, this is why we launched a couple of months ago the ability of our totally free global IT asset inventory, whereby with the combination of the three main technology that we have built at scale now, which is the scanning technology, where we can scan every IP on the planet, every website on the planet to identify what is there behind that IP. We have also now our agent technology. So wherever you can put an agent, then now we have the real-time view of everything that changes into that device, built in, if you prefer. And then the third element is what is called the passive scanning or the network analysis, where everything that connects to your computing network, suddenly we can identify what that is. And we bring all of that. And now through a combination of machine learning, etc., we can provide to you with the continuous and real-time view of all of your assets, those that you know, wherever you can put an agent, or those that you don't know because they just connect to the network. And we make that totally free. And this works across on-premise, endpoint, cloud, containers, web applications, and also as well OT and IoT devices. And to either answer your question about the built-in, we have also built an SDK. So now today we're moving into the OT and IoT, whereby now the vendors could build the agent within their system. And that agent is a very small agent, it's a 3 megabyte agent that essentially beams up all the changes and then goes into our backend, which analyzes all of that in real time. So that's part of building in. And of course, there's other things that you need to do. And we're also an open platform in a way that we have APIs because, of course, we cannot do everything. Nobody can. And also, you need to interoperate with even the system which does exist today. So we're a very good citizen in that sense that all the data that we collect, we believe is not our data, is the data of our customers. And that's a very important point. our customers can take all the data we collect via our APIs, and they can do whatever they want with it or whatever they need to do with it.
You mentioned there having agents, getting third parties to work with you to build agents. Part of our historical problem is we have a lot of things out there that don't have agents and were never designed to have agents. One of our biggest challenges at the moment is not just operational technology and IoT that's old, but technology that can't be updated. It can't take a patch because there's no mechanism to do this. When we discover a zero-day breach on these, it becomes a forever-day breach. They will forever be vulnerable. How do we get people to be able to, first of all, identify them through the scanning? And secondly, what sort of mechanisms should we be deploying to protect those so that we can spot attacks, we can make sure that they're never infected, and we can save ourselves an awful lot of heartache?
It's extremely correct. So you need to identify, and that's what our solution, our global IT asset inventory does. This is not the free part. We charge for that. But the free part is you can do your global IT asset inventory and know what you are. But then you can discover all of the end-of-life devices. And then, of course, there's no more patch on this one. Now you know where they are. We also are coming up with additional technology where we could give you the network topology, because we have, of course, the combination again of the passive scanning our agent. We can have a pretty good view of your network. So this is something we're working on. So there you will have your network topology. So then you could see if those assets are reachable. And if they are reachable, then in that case, you need to cut the link and either retire them totally because there's no other solution for you, or you could isolate them and you could essentially continue. So that's one of the mitigation factors. There's also what we do is to speak about the devices that we don't know. That's where the passive scanning come in, because we can look at the traffic, we can see the protocols, we can even identify through machine learning. We have creating libraries, so we can say, haha, that device that you got here, we know exactly what it is, because we have identified the way it communicates, and we can essentially analyze what that device is. So we give you that continuous view. There's no magic. At some point in time, you need to have humans also involved in making those decisions. Then the beauty of today is that today you need to think in terms of scale and response and automate as much as you can, because we cannot throw at that scale humans. And so that's why the eliminating false positive and false negatives are very key, has always been key. This is what Qualys excel on the vulnerability side. Now we're coming up with the next generation of SIEM and EDR, and our focus is not on scale, but also is making sure that you don't have false positive, or that you reduce to the minimum the false positive and false negatives. And which is obviously, the more contextual information you have, the more you can do that. The problem today of all of these point solutions that we have today is that they don't speak with each other, and making them speak with each other is almost impossible. And therefore, you don't have much context. Not having context, then you increase naturally the number of false positive and false negative, because it may seem that there's something here, but in reality, no. But with a little bit more context, you can say, no, yeah, that's a real vulnerability, or that's a real attack. And then, of course, take the appropriate measures.
There's about 9 things I want to take out of that, but we don't have time to take them all out. I would like to take out network topology. And the reason for that is, if we look where people are at the moment, they have no idea what business units are buying in the cloud. They have no idea who's working from home or who's working from a coffee shop or what's happening at any point in time. They therefore have no understanding of what the network topology is anymore, of where all the connections are coming from, where all the data is going, where the flow of information is in the business. How many of your customers, when you give them the opportunity to see their network topology, are completely surprised by how random and spread that is compared to what they think it really is?
Absolutely. And in fact, I will give you the example of Qualys. We are not a very large company, although we have large numbers of customers and very large customers, but we have about 1,300 people. And we, of course, are using our own technology. We created the global IT asset inventory. The beauty of what we have, our solution, is that it's pretty much automated. And we also classify by business units, because, of course, looking at a few things, we can almost automatically say, oh, this is a device which belongs in finance, because you could see the applications they have, etc. So we can really analyze all of that. And that is not 100% correct, but at least it gives you a first pretty automated part. And then again, you can put the humans now to really verify. I was absolutely amazed to see the complexity of our network. And we discovered also toothbrushes that were connecting to the network, because somebody was coming with them brushing their tooth. Nobody had the idea. Very few people know what they have. And that's the point. Now, the good news of all of that is that also there's a major change which is occurring, which is going to simplify the network. And here you can mark my words. The network as we know it, the corporate network, is about to disappear. I thought it would have disappeared a long time ago. But of course, the internet technology were not mature enough. The internet is the network, which means today that topology, which is almost extremely difficult to essentially apprehend in the current networking environment, which has been growing almost like a cancer because of the need of connecting and connecting and connecting, is going to be greatly simplified. Of course, we need to secure the DNS. There's a lot of things we need to do on that internet. And then you have, of course, with an agent everywhere, and you have the geolocation, and et cetera, and then much easier to analyze also the traffic, because you don't have that many things. So you don't have to put the sensors on every tap port and really capture all that data. You can be right there. Again, that's the point that I was making earlier in the very beginning. I've always believed that it's going to be significantly easier to secure the new computing environment. But again, it requires that fundamentally today, part of that digital transformation, it requires that IT, security, compliance, DevOps now, which has become the really new actor, if you prefer, and the vendors really work in unison and unite. And with that thing in mind, that we need to build security into it instead of stopping bolting on. So that's a major change. So some companies will do it, some other will disappear because they could not. When I look back in the old good days, Novell, which had the fantastic solution for the NAT, disappeared. Why? Because they could not realize that they had to move from IPS, which was their proprietary protocol, to TCP/IP. If they would have done that, Novell would probably could have become the Cisco. But they didn't. So somebody else do it. So I guess why we all have to disappear one day, because that's part of the law of evolutions. If we were eternal, maybe we will not evolve.
Several times you've talked about automation, and our biggest challenge perhaps from security is the volume of data that we deal with. And much of that data is hard to understand. When you're sitting there as an analyst and you're looking through page after page of log files, there comes a point where even if there was an attack in progress, you wouldn't see it because you become blind to the challenge. But there's also a danger of relying too much on automation and too much on machine learning, because it needs to understand context, another word you used, and initially it doesn't. And the only way to teach it context is not just to give it that context of volume of data, but give it that context of the breadth of data, of the diversity of data. Where are organizations in understanding that machine learning is not just about throwing data at it and assuming the machine will ingest and eat it, but of actually having to work with that machine learning to build their security solutions to support their analysts?
That's another very good question. First of all, and I use machine learning and not artificial intelligence. The reason why I didn't use artificial intelligence is because there is far too many variables today in security to really for us to pretend that we could have a system which is capable to analyze and reach to the decisions. That will be creating a lot of false positives and false negatives, which in security, of course, this is death fundamentally. So it doesn't work. We are not using that. Machine learning is the technology which is very well defined today, which, as you rightfully saw, it's only one element which allows you to fundamentally discover something which is repeatable. So you have realized that, for example, that kind of protocol is typically used by this type of machines. Now suddenly you can categorize that. When if you look at that protocol, you say, this is that type of machine. So it's more like it allows you to classify. And the beauty today of technology like Elasticsearch is that now suddenly you can sort through these classifications that machine learning will help you to do and create filters in milliseconds. And then you could have now the humans. So for example, I will give you some kind of idea of the way we look at our SIEM that we're currently building. The SIEM of today have very little context. They look at the logs. That's essentially what they do. And then, yes, you can pump data from other places, but how do you correlate and make sure that that data is also the data that you think it is? Very difficult, because Qualys very uniquely today, and that's the energy that we put and the effort we put in the beginning to collect as much data as we could, because we are the one collecting the data ourselves. We know what that data is, so we can absolutely correlate that data. Yeah, it's coming from really that source, but it's about that device. And that data is coming from that other source, but it's still about that device. Now we can correlate. Then, of course, I will tell you the example. We will be bringing more information to our incident response system, more context. But then the beauty is that the human, which is in front of that system, will have, first of all, instead of having to go fishing, if I may say so, to pick up that data, we'll have less data to start with to operate, so he can make a better judgment. But then I suddenly say, but I would like also to look at that. then the system could remember that, because with that kind of a situation, the humans went and look at that and make some sense of it. Next time, you could present that information without having that analyst to go. So you make the analyst, and the more experts you're going to have handling the system, the more they can feed back into the machine. And that's what I could call artificial intelligence, but with the human intelligence. And that's what I think the technology of today allows you to do that. So this is not a dream. This is really something that we can do, and therefore eliminate significantly the problem that you have today on the ZDR solution and the SIEM solution. EDR and SIEM for us is the same thing, because EDR is an incident response on your endpoints, and the SIEM is the incident response on everything. It's just the EDR is only a small segment. Their problem is the false positive. I don't even speak about the false negative, which are far harder to eliminate. And I know that very well, because in past life I was in radiology. In fact, we had a significant impact on mammography, because our devices had absolutely a small focal point, so they had much better quality of images. And I learned them that if you have a false positive and you send the woman to do a biopsy, not only is very costly, human toll on that woman is important, because that's suddenly the anxiety. Do I have cancer or not? And if it's not true, you can avoid that. And of course, the false negative is even worse, because if there's a tumor that you have not seen, then of course, you know, that has consequences as well. So I've been very sensitized since a long time about the importance of false negative and false positive and security. This is what I realized, that that's job number one. Absolutely eliminating false positive and false negative, because that's what you have to do. Now today, the second issue is scale. You need to do that at a much bigger scale than the enterprise scale, because everything connects everything, and maybe one third of your laptops are roaming on the internet, whichever countries. How are you going to control all of that? And then the third, of course, is the real time. You don't have the time anymore, because the connections are pretty fast and pretty quick. And once the bad guys are in your network, they can move pretty quickly. So you have to absolutely react in real time. And that's the new challenge.
Your big announcement at the show is VMDR. How much will that change this landscape for those analysts and those organizations?
VMDR is essentially, which we call for vulnerability management, detection and response, as essentially four components. The first one is that global IT asset inventory that we just discussed. You cannot simply secure what you don't see or you don't know. So that's the foundational things. Then from there, we can identify in real time the vulnerabilities. If there's a 0 day, we know that there is a 0 day, and we go back to our backend, and instantly, with milliseconds, we can tell you exactly where you're exposed. If we find the vulnerabilities, also we'll tell you where they are. The second thing is prioritization, the vulnerabilities. We have also made a very big effort, because we have, again, more context, to really create a very, very good system which automatically will allow you to prioritize. And then, to go back again to the element of humans, we also have created on the top of that filters, and I will give you one example. You may have a system which has a vulnerability of severity 5, but again, if that is not reachable, it's not necessarily the most important one that you want to address immediately. You could also have a system, an asset, which has a severity 5 or above, and essentially has also a misconfiguration. These two combined are now suddenly becoming significantly more important, because that means it's going to be much easier to access that vulnerability through the misconfiguration and then leverage the vulnerabilities. So we have that notion of filters, again, because everything that we do is indexed on Elasticsearch. To give you an idea of the scale, we're indexing today 3 trillion data points on our Elasticsearch clusters. We have more than 6 billion messages a day that move into our Kafka backend, so everything could communicate in real time. In milliseconds, we will essentially, through that filter, tell you, these are now the devices which have both a vulnerability and a misconfiguration. And so you can apply multiple filters, and that's the second part of that prioritization. All that is totally included as well. And then we introduce the patch management as well, which allows you now to patch. Our agent can push the patch. And then, of course, after that, we audit the remediation. So what is interesting is that a lot of people speak about SOAR, very well known, which, of course, is something important. But the view that we have of SOAR is you don't want to put another system in between, where humans have to go now and suddenly connect things with everything and then put the logic themselves, etc. We believe in what we call transparent orchestration. I give you that example with the integration of our agent with Azure. It's what we call that transparent orchestration. It's all done for you. You don't have to think about it. That's what automation is all about. With VMDR, all the process that I told you, from identifying your assets, creating assets group, identifying your vulnerabilities, prioritizing them, patching them, and auditing the remediation, is essentially totally automated. And that's the very big difference. And of course, it's today also the foundation of what we're doing today that I mentioned. We have expanded the platform significantly, so we can now move into more of the incidence response capabilities, more response. Because at the end of the day, knowing about your vulnerabilities, even if it's absolutely precise, but not being capable of doing anything about, is obviously not what you need to do. You need to find your vulnerabilities, and you need to and across a very complex environment, and then you need to be able to respond as much in automated as you can. You always have to, when you design your system, and that's what we did, for example, with our vulnerability management, where we have the notion of what we call the possible vulnerabilities. We know when you have one, and then sometimes we may infer there is one, but we cannot check it because we will have to run an exploit, and that's something we cannot do, we don't want to do automatically, obviously. But in these cloud environments, patching automatically, you look today even at the endpoints. An endpoint is much easier today to patch automatically than, of course, a critical server. So the more we can push into that automation, the better. But always, we let the humans, at the end of the day, intervene when necessary. And you need to really bring the two together, which means a very good UIs, very good system, but build security in with the what we call that built-in workflows at the end of the day.
I think that's the one message that the C-suite has to take on board at the moment. Automation is king, but automation is nothing without the humans alongside it.
And that's the point I'm making in my presentation tomorrow, is that today I look at the successful company which embark into the digital transformation. And what is interesting, in Europe, for example, we have a company which they just published a very nice little video, this is Société Générale, on LinkedIn, where they show they made the decision many years ago, and we know that this is one of our customers, because GDPR was in fact what made them realize that they had to absolutely restructure their entire computing environment, because to try to prove to the regulator that you were taking good care of the data and of the security and of the privacy of the data of your customers in this current environment, as you very well said before, how do you know? They said, wait a minute, if we want to really prove and be good guardian of the data for our customers, which is at the end of the day in our own interest, because you want to carry trust, you have to have trust. So they embark into the digital transformation quite a few years ago. And in that little video that they published, it's all in French, what was fascinating to me is that they have all the different part of the organization in that video. Everybody working together to essentially not only retool the IT infrastructure, but also build the security in it. And that's absolutely what the C-suite needs to realize. And we see some companies in the US now, which are essentially, we see the silos, the old silos crumbling. And we see now a new category, which is pushed by DevOps. But we see now in some large banks, for example, CDOs, which now report to a committee to the board, and they are the one in charge of the digital transformation. Because essentially try to push these silos to say, wait a minute, you cannot continue just looking at your piece of the business, no matter how good a job that you do. Today, we need to rethink our entire computing paradigm. And of course, using this new cloud technology. And again, the cloud is not going to Azure, is not going to Amazon. It's a much bigger thing. It's using these internet technologies. And one thing I would like to leave you with, I was thinking about that. That's interesting, all these new technologies, where are they coming from? And they're essentially coming from the Google, the Facebook, etc., which is very similar to IBM, I think it was in 2000, when they invested $1 billion in Linux. They wanted to keep it open source, and that was very smart on their part, because they knew to make sure that Linux could have a bigger life, they needed to let it free. And that's what I think the Google, the Facebook, etc., very smartly realized that it was in their interest, because they were building things at a scale that nobody had done before, that it would be in their ultimate interest to make these as open source, which we today are leveraging significantly. We have 140 open source engines in our backend, okay, from Kafka, from Elasticsearch, Kafka, etc., etc. And so that's what is fueling that digital transformation phenomenon, and more to come. Who would have thought 3 years ago that Dockers will exist, and totally eliminating essentially the needs for virtualization?
Who would have thought 15, 20 years ago, when Steve Ballmer went to Munich and told the council there, get rid of your open source and go with Microsoft, open source would be so big as it is now?
Exactly. Absolutely. That's a very good point.
Philippe, thank you for talking to us.
My pleasure. Okay, thank you very much.